ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, one and all, to another exciting edition, another exasperated episode, kind of like a petite mal seizure. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's also, incidentally, as well as being fluoridated, Fukushima irradiated, and everybody is benefiting as a part-time, and everybody is enjoying it and benefiting from Fukushima radiation by getting a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. It was a recommendation by a prime minister, John Key, who used to work for the Federal Reserve. They know how to make the economy work, baby. Mm-hmm. Work for them. Today, we have a very special guest who has a extremely popular website called The Atlantean Conspiracy. You can find it at AtlanteanConspiracy.com. He's a man with a bunch of eclectic interests and capacities, as it turns out. He's doing Wing Chun, a form of martial arts, with the bubblegum hand movements and stuff like that, with the Morpheus snap your neck with a silly spine move kind of thing. And he's also into being a vegetarian and meditating and health and spirituality and of course, as with most people who are in these movements, as soon as you start to learn about how to keep yourself healthy and how to keep yourself right, you then also find out why you weren't so healthy in the first place, and that it's actually a deliberate conspiracy against people's health, spiritually and physically, and mentally as well. You know, haven't you noticed how we're all kind of sick in a trinity of illness? It's quite fun to live in this world, isn't it? Eric Dubay, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vincent. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Can you hear me all right? Yeah,
coming through loud and clear. Is there anything I've missed in terms of your introduction here?
No, that was a great introduction. Sounds like you've done your homework. Thanks.
Well, thank you. I've been trying to... I think it's a lot more respectful if you know who you're talking to, isn't it? Okay. So, can I ask you, just in this point in time, okay, it's coming on to the end of the year, the seasons are changing. What are you getting up to, and what's on your mind around this time of year?
Well, just recently I've quit my day job, and I'm going full-time just doing, just writing and fighting, as I put it. Just writing my books, writing the website, and working on Bangkok Wing Chun is my training kun. So I've got about 6 or 7 students now. And I just do private Wing Chun yoga and pranayama lessons with them. So I'm really enjoying that, but pretty busy with that, as well as writing on the website every day.
Mm-hmm. It's something new that you're experiencing, coming out on your own and supporting yourself via not working for somebody else?
Yeah, exactly. That's been the main drive, is that I've just wanted to, you know, be my own boss and make my own hours and just do my own thing. Before I was teaching English, and it's just not my passion, really. Teaching is my passion, but English is not really my thing. But I've been doing it for years, so now teaching martial arts, now that's something I've always wanted to do. I did a little bit of, I taught Taekwondo back when I was about 20, and I loved that, but then I didn't get an opportunity to do that here until recently, so now, yeah, making my own money, doing my own thing, living my passion, it's great, I'm enjoying it.
Is it kind of like... you were resisting the universe and what it wanted you to do, and now suddenly everything's sort of flowing in the right direction?
Totally, man. It was just like that. Feel like, for years I knew that I didn't really want to be teaching English. It was just the financially viable thing to do. It's what most foreigners do here in Thailand when you come. I have an English degree from college, so it's just kind of English because I like writing and reading and whatnot. And just the financially viable thing was to become an English teacher, but since a little kid, since 5 years old, I've been writing, and I always knew I wanted to be an author. But I wasn't making enough money at it to do it full time. Now it's I'm getting there, you know, with the website and with the book sales and the Wing Chun combined. Now I'm making enough that I can quit my English teaching job I did a couple months ago. And yeah, I really feel great since then. Like you said, it's like I was kind of resisting what the universe wanted me to do. And then once I kind of put that as my focus, it took me a while. You gotta save up some of your slave money so that you can break free from the Matrix masters, as I put it in a recent post. But now that I've done it, geez, yeah. I mean, I feel like, why didn't I do this sooner? And this should be a priority for anybody. I mean, in this world, college prepares us to get a piece of paper to give to another person to convince them that we're good enough to be their slave. But what school should really be is like a place for us to find our passion and then find a way to make it a financially viable option for the rest of our life to just do that thing, whatever it is. Everybody's got something that they're really good at, and they do it for free anyway. And then when they go down that path and they start getting paid for it, boy, I mean, you really start feeling like, hey, this is, you know, like you said, the universe is pushing me down the right path, and I'm not resisting it anymore.
Well, I think it's because, what was it? You sometimes have a dream or an ambition. The difficulty becomes the people around you don't know what that dream is. They don't see that ambition as clearly as you do. So they tell you to give up on your dream and go get a slave job like them.
Exactly. Yeah, we've been, both of us, my girlfriend and I, have both been running into this. Our friends, even our parents and, you know, family, you name it, doesn't matter how much they love you, how well-meaning they are, how close to you they are, whatever. Most, like 99%, it's all negative. They're just like, oh my God, are you serious? You quit your job? Oh. And they probably mean well, right? They're looking out for you because that's what they've experienced, is that if I lost my slave job, I don't know what I'd do. But the point is, we're not losing the job. We're saving up some money, you know, and then starting our own thing and making it down our own path. And so it's not like we're losing something. We're gaining something. We're gaining freedom. Feel that every day. I mean, I can do this interview at 5 o'clock in the morning and not have to worry about having to go to work later or anything, you know. It's great.
Well, see, and I forgot, we only just sorted this out last night, the extraordinary time difference here. And it reminds me of when I started in radio, where it was 3 to 5 a.m. for 6 months during the winter, 5 days a week. And it kind of messes with your life. But I love doing it because it meant I didn't have to go get a slave job, right? Like losing sleep, not feeling secure, not having all the fancy little things that you want is actually preferable to having to get up by somebody else's clock, go to somebody else's place of business, work by somebody else's rules, and never be able to question that somebody else, not having any value as a person. Whereas when you're doing it for yourself, you start to actually, ironically, interact with more people. Other people who also have figured out that they don't want to do what other people tell them to do. And I made a pledge to myself some time ago, and I think we all make this pledge whether or not we are cognizant of it. I can't work for anybody ever again. I can only work with people.
So how long have you been just working with people and not for people?
This is like 5 years into it now.
Yeah? Wow. And what did you do before? What was your original slave job?
Well, ironically, I didn't have any like one particular job. I'm kind of multi-talented, so whatever job I do, I wind up becoming the company's best employee, make the job, make the boss look bad, and then the boss fires me. So I have to go get a new slave job. And I did it industry by industry. Like I went through labouring. I went through vines and in the vineyards in Waiheke Island. I did a security job as a bouncer. I was doing work in plays and stuff like that. And just all these different eclectic jobs. And where I really started to shine and actually start making money was in sales, telesales, calling people up and basically, they didn't know who I was. I don't know who they were. And yet, I was able to force a conversation and force a relationship enough in a short period of time in order to sell them a product. And exact same thing. It took me longer to get good at sales as it did all those other jobs. It took me about 18 months before I was number one at the company. And then my bosses got jealous and I got fired because I don't when I become number one, I get bored because I want a new challenge, and that's my problem. As soon as I get as soon as I don't have any other people around me that are bigger than me and are helping me to go forward, I no longer see a point in being there because I have nothing to learn, I have nothing to gain. And everybody else simply seems to leech off me. This movement is very intensely different because every day I meet somebody who in many ways is a better man than I am or smarter or physically more capable, something better than me. Like yourself, for example, I watched some of your videos doing the Wing Chun with the sticky hands. Oh, my God. I can't do that. And it looks so cool.
Yeah, yeah. Chi Sao with sticky hands, that's a unique thing to Wing Chun. It's a way that you can kind of use sensitivity to overcome any opponent. Instead of using brute force and speed, basically what it is you can see it on YouTube and stuff. And if you're not sure what you're looking at, it just kind of looks like two guys going like this. I'm moving my arms back and forth. But what it is you can imagine in any fight situation, it's the first punch or if it's takedown, whatever the first arm motion is, you're going to have a point of contact. And in Wing Chun, you call that the bridge. And once you've bridged, even with your eyes closed, even just bridging one arm, you can now use touch sensitivity once you train it to know what the other person's doing with their other arm, their legs, and from there, like if they start to kick, you can actually pull down on that arm and it'll prevent them from kicking. And if they pull back on that arm, you know that that means another punch is coming in from their other arm, just from the torque, the way the human body works. And you start to develop this system where you basically become impenetrable. Once you make that bridge, you never lose it. It's called sticky hands because you intentionally stick to the person. And from there, you let them lead, basically. Whatever they're going to do, you let them overcommit to their attack, and then you use that energy against them.
I would wonder if there was a way to defeat the New World Order using a similar principle in a tactique sort of way.
That's an interesting idea. With yoga and Wing Chun, they're physical disciplines, but I always talk to students about how they have mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects as well. So like with something like Chi Sao, this sticky hands thing, it's like a two-person meditation because while you're doing this, you're completely reacting only. It's all based on sensitivity. So if you think, oh, I'm going to attack this way, just that thought will allow a skilled practitioner to manipulate you into losing. But if you go into this meditative kind of mode where you're just really sensing what they're doing, you allow them to do what they're going to do, and the opening, just you shoot in towards the center. So this idea of diverting energy that Wing Chun has, you never directly take energy, clashing heads together, fists together. It's always you divert the energy to one side or the other of your center line. So whenever energy, whether it's a kick, a throw, a takedown, a punch is coming in, you divert it off your center. So it's going to go to the left or to the right of you. And you actually use a triangle kind of blocking position to do so. Just geometry, the wedge, the triangle is the strongest shape in nature. So when any force comes in, you can actually use this shape, and it's the Wing Chun kind of ready stance. It's shaped like a triangle, to force the opponent on one side or the other of your center line. And then from there, you're on balance. They're off balance. They're And so, anyway, that's the physical aspect of it. But yeah, mentally and spiritually and stuff, you can apply this to anything in life where whatever it is, instead of directly resisting it, just use this wedge concept and let it kind of flow at you. And you just let that energy go to one side or the other instead of taking it on directly.
I use this principle with YouTube commenters. Vinny, I hate you. You're a moron. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Here's Eric Dufay from AtlanteanConspiracy.com. And also, you can join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There's not a lot of sticky hands paraphernalia going on in there at the moment. We'll be right back.
And live right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Call-in lines are open. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 if you want some, you know, Wing Chun advice of some description. I always thought that was something that Westerners are prone to do, is they make fun of languages and words and concepts that they don't understand, and that's where most of the ignorance. And I remember I had a discussion one time, and you might understand this, but I was trying to understand how different races express their racism towards other races, and it turns out that Caucasian races tend to make jokes about other races to degrade them and stuff like that. And I don't know just how other races express their racism or discrimination. I presume it's much the same. But I would like to think, just how do you achieve a balance, right, between knowing who you are and being confident, while also trying to understand other people and accept them for who they are. I mean, just as long as they're not damaging you or your property, kind of thing, or at least that's my methodology anyway. What about yourself?
Yeah, well, that's something you learn living in another culture. Been living here in Thailand for 8 years. While you're saying that, it made me think of a story. In Asian languages, they have a lot more vowel sounds than in English. So when we make fun of Asian languages, we'll make like sounds like ying dong ding dong wee sung ho hai hai hong, and we'll make funny vowel sounds because that's just what sounds different to us. And you mentioned about how we'll make fun of people. Well, from my experience, sure, other cultures make fun of us too. That's their way of doing it too, but they have a different sound, because in English, it has the main sound in the English language is the phoneme and from the, and a lot of B and D sounds. So when they make fun of us, people that don't speak fluent English, they'll go just like we go ching chong ming chong ding dang ming wang ming wong. They go
that's classic.
That's what English speaker sounds like to an Asian that's, you know, not fluent.
That's exactly what I was just referring to, wasn't it? Okay, and so what I've determined in life is that the more we change, the more we stay the same. And everybody's so similar in a lot of ways. And in order to make ourselves feel special, we accentuate the dissimilarities that other people have.
Yeah, even if it's just something as simple as a vowel sound, that's enough to make them, worthy of laughing at. But they do the same back to us, and I'm sure all cultures have their own, little jibes that they poke fun at each other. I guess it's fine as long as it's all done in jest. You see it on TV all the time, and sometimes it's tasteful and it feels fine and funny. Sometimes it goes a little overboard, and you feel like, what is this? What's the motivation behind this racist humor? But I don't know. As long as there's a good feeling behind it, there are different races, so we gotta deal with that fact somehow.
Yeah. Well, people are funny in general, and what I don't like is hyper racism sensitivity. You know, right. if you make any joke that could be construed as not PC, even though there's no actual racist or hatred intention behind it. They manifest the hatred. They manifest the intent and claim that you are the person who is manifesting it.
Right, right. Because it's their kind of mindset in the first place that has shut it off. It's like people that never swear and like, I'm never going to swear. That shuts off something. I'm not sure what it's called. But when you do that and you create a mental wall in your head and you just say, I'm never going to say a thing that could possibly be misconstrued as racist. And if anyone else does, I'm going to condemn them for it or with curse words or with whatever that may be. When you build that wall, someone's going to come along and knock it down.
Yeah, it happens. Speaking of knocking down the walls, we've had somebody holding on the line for a little bit of time. Caller, area code 561, you're on the air. Caller, are you there? Apparently not. Okay. Well, anyway, this also reminds me of an incident that happened to me in high school, bro. I think I was like 16 or something like that. And I tried to have this conversation with a couple of people, one guy from South Africa, one girl from New Zealand who's Maori, and me. And I was trying to illustrate about that kind of white people's tendency to make fun of other races. And I was wondering how other people do it. And so the Māori girl kind of looks a little bit angry or something like that. And so she says, okay, well, explain what you mean. You know, provide an example. What's a joke? And I go, okay, well, in the case of Māori, there's a joke that's very old. What do you call a Māori on a clothesline? A Māori go round. And it wasn't the South African guy laughed. I didn't. I was just fully straight face. I was just doing it as an example. Not to be racist or anything. She then went to the deputy principal and said that I had claimed that Maoris were all bums and that they were all scum and that I had been very racist and I'd been pulled into her office to explain myself. And it was just like, this is all made up. I was trying to have a reasonable intellectual discussion about what racism is. And she made up all this crap about me. And you know what was really scary? Is that the other people at the table actually supported her claim because they didn't actually like me in that class in that school anyway. And they saw an opportunity to get me suspended for 3 days and not have to deal with me. And that's exactly what happened.
Right, and isn't that what she's doing in the first place by being overly adamant about any possible comment that could be misconstrued as racist? I'm going to fascistly come down on it. So it's more like an excuse for her own, need to be superior, right?
Well, it's a prejudice thing, really. If you feel prejudiced, you become prejudicial.
Right, there you go.
I don't know, and it's real strange because we're talking about the universe and the flow and things like that. And what occurs to me is this concept of synchronicity. when you stop doing what other people tell you, when you start doing what your heart tells you, all these things start happening out that are outside of your control that have an immense effect, and a lot of them become really positive. The difficulty is when you're doing that around some people who are absolutely committed to disrupting the flow. Maybe we should drop off at that gas station. Nope, we're sticking to the plan. This is the mentality that voids people's possibility of even having synchronicity benefit their life. Randomly bump into somebody, have a conversation, incidentally start up a business deal or go on a radio show or blah, 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 blah. You know, there's all these possible things that can happen that you simply avoid if you have a set mind pattern and a plan kind of thing.
Sure. And the materialist worldview has no place for synchronicity anyway. So for a lot of people, the idea that synchronicity basically means a meaningful coincidence. The idea that a meaningful coincidence could objectively exist is impossible for them. For them, the meaning is only given by you, and it is truly just a coincidence. There's no such thing as the universe conspiring to bring about something you wanted, which is what synchronicity seems to be. Though I've had similar synchronicities myself. Sounds like you have as well. And when you know that it exists and you follow it, even just for fun, when you start to see these synchronistic things happening, just, all right, well, let's travel down this. You know, you see the same number pop up a few times, or the same person, or the same word in the same day, whatever it might be. Just pay close attention. You might actually find that your materialist worldview will start to wane, start to fade away. That's between synchronicity and some other things. That's what happened to me. I started to find that, man, this can't just be coincidence. There's got to be more to it. It's just so, the odds against the synchronicities happening are so ridiculous that it made me start to believe, like, the universe must be one in the sense that it knows what I'm thinking. Like, synchronicities show the veil between what's inside here and what's outside there in the world. So when you think something and then boom, it shows up in the outside world, and then it does again and again, you start to realize, man, what's going on in here in my head and what's happening outside, seems like there's not that big of a gap between them. They're actually one continuous flow. And like you said, when you start to go with that flow, it becomes more and more obvious, and the synchronicities spiral and become more and more frequent, and you're going on your flow. You're going with the universe, the universe's flow for your life, what you're supposed to do. I have a little synchronicity story I can share with you. But like, for instance, it was a few years ago, I was doing a lot of yoga, and I had this feeling come over me, which happened a lot of times when you physically release stress from doing yoga, when you physically relax and stuff, there's a mental thing too with it. You can think about it, like, if you have a stressful day, you hunch over, your muscles are tight and all this, and so the mental transferred to the physical. But it works the other way too. So if you start stretching and doing yoga, the physical transfers to the mental, and so when you relax your body and you de-stress your body, your mind kind of de-stresses, and emotionally you feel a lot lighter and better. But anyway, so I'd been doing this, and I was feeling emotionally great. I barely feel my body. I was doing 3 or 4 hours of yoga a day at this point, and I was starting to get this thing where I'd feel sadness come over me out of nowhere, to the point that my face would scrunch and tears would come out, and I'd be like, what is going on here? And at one time, I got this feeling like it was an Iraqi woman, and I was feeling her pain because I'm an American, and my American tribe is over there killing their people, and like, it's like I was picking up this Iraqi woman's pain from the ether. And that's actually what started me on this conspiracy path and writing the Atlantean conspiracy and everything. Before that, I was just, you know, writing my asbestos head book. I was doing yoga. I didn't have any inkling to conspiracy and whatnot. That was actually what started it. But that's not the synchronicity. What happened was when those moments of sadness came over me, I started thinking, I need to transform this sadness that is coming into my body into something good. I didn't understand it, but I thought, all right, I'm just going to think positive and do like an om kind of vibration to stop my face from scrunching and the tears coming out. And the second I finished my om vibration, the lights, my alarm clock, everything in the room went out boom, for about 2 seconds, and then it came back on. And I'm like, what? It was like right at the end of my breath, like it was the perfect timing if something supernatural was going to happen. So I was like, whoa. I called up my friend on the third floor and the fifth floor of the building to talk about the power outage. And they said, no power outage. That didn't happen. So at the most, the power went out on my floor, or maybe just my room. And so I was like, whoa, all right. So the universe, if this was a real thing, whatever just happened, if I just somehow turned off the electricity with my ohm, can I have another sign? So the next day, I'm on another floor watching a South Park episode in my girlfriend's room, and it's the episode with that guy, the dog whisperer. I don't know if you've seen it, and he's going with Cartman. No, all right. So, but anyway. In the episode, he says the words, express the dominant energy. And the second he says that, boom, again, lights go out, TV goes out, DVD stops for about 2 seconds, comes back on. For whatever reason, the DVD has skipped back just enough perfectly so that when it comes back on, he says again, express the dominant energy. And I'm like, express the dominant energy twice after I just had the power outage the day before on a different floor, and power outages aren't like a regular thing or whatever. And it's like, whoa, is that just a paranoid, meaningful coincidence, or does synchronicity actually exist in this universe, you know?
Yeah, I think it kind of gives you hope. We just moved into this place, right, bro? And the rent's like way more than the last place. And I got no money, and I got no idea what the hell I'm going to do. And women always stress out about that kind of thing, you know, when money's tight. They've got the whole nesting instinct going thing. So if everything ain't sorted, they can't relax. Sarah was getting really, really upset. And I said to her, baby, money's going to come. The money's going to come, okay? Believe me, I know every single time. When I really, really need things the most, they always show up. And sure enough, they have. And they always do. And it's her birthday today. And we've got like a little tea tree thingy that her friend gave her. Little sausage rolls, little pastries and stuff that we baked last night. It's going to be nice. Everything works out. As long as you trust in the synchronistic flow. We'll be right back at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Me driving and I won't stop, and it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, I'll let them all die in exasperation, have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them, and I can do anything with no permission. I have a dog
on the ladies,
I can guide a missile.
Listen up. Your HPV vaccines are ready. Go on and protect yourself from that papillomavirus. And then you'll have the added benefit of only being able to walk backwards. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the show that's all about debilitating chronic diseases, like cackling, for instance. We were talking about this over the break, my very special guest, Eric Dubay. And we came to the conclusion that this format, it's an unconventional, one. It's two guys having a conversation, like I'm sharing a story, he's sharing a story, rather than me continuing to ask questions as the host and him continuing to give these long monologue answers, as the guest. And what's come out of it, I found, is that it's something unique that you can't find anywhere else. You know, name me another radio show that actually kind of works like this and gets those really talented, amazing people who would ordinarily be guests to just chill out and have a fun conversation. Is this really, how necessary is this? Because if you want somebody who's screaming down your throat that you're about to get exterminated or drone on at you about how bad things are, you have infinite choice. Infinite. There are so many people are doing radio who have that as their format. It is the done thing. Just like the mainstream news selling fear to you and using misinformation. Just that's their modus operandi. The modus operandi of the truth movement is to give out really scary information and provide no relief from that information. You know, they're not divvying out cocktails while they say, hey, bro, that vaccine's got thimerosal in it. Here, have a drink, bro. That'll help with it. No, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. It's real hard to deal with this stuff at the best of times. And I think that having a laugh about it, being honest, being real, and casting aside all those aspersions about what's officialdom, about what's professionalism, because in my opinion, the world's currently run by professionals, and that ain't currently working out too well.
Right.
So I think it's time to be a bit amateur, I think.
Yeah, I was saying how people can feel the inauthenticity when you set up that whole format where you're the host and I'm the guest and you ask questions and I give long monologue answers, and they can feel the authenticity when it's just two guys having a conversation or whatever it might be. And same thing, when you talk about professionalism, what comes to mind is this inauthentic format where there's the interviewer and the interviewee and all the things you see that the mainstream media does. And it feels inauthentic. It feels like a lie. So what does the truth movement need? Does it need those inauthentic, lying, propagandistic methods, the tried and tested? No, it needs this. It needs just two guys having a chat. This is what we need right here. You don't need Alex Jones screaming at you. You just need to chill out and think critically. I mean, what are we trying to get people to do anyway, except for try and use their own mind? I don't think you're trying to get people to believe whatever you have to say 100%. I don't think I'm trying to get people to just believe everything I have to say, because that's just another sheeple type of thing to do. So what we want people to do instead is to just, like this, just have a completely open conversation. And one thing I've also talked about is when you talk about the truth movement, it's kind of presumptuous to say, oh, so, you know, I've Eric DeBay here, I got the truth, just listen to me, I know all the truth. So how can you even say I'm part of the truth movement? You know, I think I'm telling the truth, or I think I know what I'm talking about, but you might have different information and whatnot and know more than I do. And so who am I to be the truth guy when you actually know more about this or that thing than I do? So what's more important to me in the truth movement is honesty. It's just that we be truthful, you know, and a lot of people aren't in their life. Do you ever tell little white lies, or do you just brutally tell the honest truth all the time? You know, do you cheat on your girlfriend or your wife? Because that's lying. Do you, there's an infinite number of little things which are ways that we wear a mask to not present our true self. And those are all little lies. And that's, I'd say that's what's gotten the world where it is all these little superficial lies and everything. If everybody was just truth, just honest, sincere all the time, would we be in the trouble we're in now? Would we be fooled by psychopaths in powerful positions when they chronically manipulate and lie to us over and over again, and we always forgive them and place them back in positions of power? If we were actually honest, if we lived that kind of lifestyle where we're 100% honest to 100% of the people 100% of the time, and we lived that kind of integrity, I think we'd notice real quickly people who didn't have that kind of integrity, because we know what it means to be fully honest and open and to just put it all out on the table. And then when you see someone in their suit and tie not putting it out on the table and giving their scripted perfect answers, have their hair combed, parted perfectly and whatnot, we see that inauthenticity. And, you know, so anyway, to go full circle, that's what I think the truth movement needs, is this kind of authentic dialogue, not the old mainstream professional milieu that you're talking about.
Everybody just seems to be attacking each other consistently in this movement. It ain't all campfires and kumbaya behind the scenes between people, and there's a lot of betrayal. And because of the industry that it is essentially a place that actually values paranoia to a degree about restraint, about not getting involved with people because of such and such reputation. There's a lot of backstory research and things like that that have to happen when you want to think critically, when you want to get what you need out of a business relationship with somebody. Speaking of which, we have a caller on an anonymous line. Let's see if we can hear them. Caller, you're on the air. There's something up with the phones today, man. It's real messed up. Okay. Well, anyway, do you have any responses to what I just said?
No, sorry.
What is it, 4 o'clock in the morning? 4 o'clock in the morning right now for you? Like 5 o'clock in the morning? Something ridiculous, you know?
It's almost six now, but I've been up since 3:30, so yeah.
Okay, so I think we can forgive you. My bad, anyway. the world, and let's get real freaking general here, because we've only got like a minute or two. The world to me has basically turned into a meat grinder. You're born into it, you go in one end, and you come out the other end as meat, or at least that's how the system wants to work. And that's what happens when you go into the education as a child. Essentially, you lose all that wholeness that a complete piece of meat has, and you get ground up. Your self-confidence, your self-image, your ability to reason gets corrupted and converted. So instead of being trained to be an employer, you're being trained to be an employee who can't think on the spot, who doesn't understand what's important, who can't communicate effectively, so they become so much easier to control. I think we need to break free of those controls. There are so many of them, and even as we begin to wake up, like people in the so-called truth movement, we still are brainwashed. And the trick of brainwashing is knowing that you're brainwashed, okay? And trying to figure out how you can get out of that little psychological dilemma that's feasting on your brains up there. So we've got two callers on the line now. 561 area code, you're on the air? Yes? No? See? It's still dead. There you go. And then we got Tim in Wisconsin. Are you there? Yes? No? No. Oh, my God. There is something remarkably fracked up about this Shiite Muslim. I apologize, folks. This is the thing that happens in live radio. And if you're not prepared to go with it, you won't last. I am prepared to go with it on the other hand, because I think it's actually pretty hilarious that we've had, like, more callers during this one show than we've had in the last, like, 4 weeks, and every single one of them can't be heard. Because we don't normally take callers, and all of a sudden the boards are lighting up for you, Eric. You must be a wanted man or something.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's nice to be wanted, isn't it? But sometimes you don't want to be wanted, you just want to be left alone.
Yeah, you don't want to be on one of those old Wild West wanted posters.
Well, I'll actually show you one of my John Key not wanted posters over the break. It's our Prime Sinister. And you know how you got the old West wanted posters? I got one with the picture of the Prime Sinister, and it says he's not wanted.
There you go.
Can you hear me?
We can now, Tim, but it's just too late. We're coming to break, bro. So I'll tell you what, you hold on over the break, and we'll be right back. At the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, my very special guest is Eric Dubay.
He might roll a duvet over the break. And you can join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and the archives will be uploaded there as well as americanfreedomradio.com. So, ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. One more whole hour with Eric. Be right back soon. Of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We know where you live. And now does the CIA, because we have a little tracking module on there that sends a drone strike directly to your house within 5 minutes of tuning into the Vinnie Eastwood Show, because it's just that dangerous. Now, let's see if our callers are actually there and working. Tim, are you there? Tim, no. Next caller. 561 area code. You've called in like 3 or 4 times. I hope it works this time. Are you there?
Hey, Vinny.
Oh, can yeah. You hear me? It works.
It's working.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy.
Oh, great. Okay. Hi, my name's Chris.
Chris? Yeah. What state are you calling from, bro?
I'm calling from Florida in the state.
Okay. Drone is dispatched. It should be there shortly. Okay, so you've got 5 minutes to tell us what you're doing to, bro.
I just wanted to say I'm loving the interview, and I caught you on YouTube a while back, Vinny, and I had heard you before. You had switched to the kind of split-screen format, so I hadn't seen you, and I was like, who's this guy that's joking around and, playing the role in a funny kind of a way, as opposed to doom and gloom. And I really kind of dug it. And, so I kind of, perused more of your stuff, and then I caught back up with you later on. And, then I got to put a face to the name. And I just love the style, that you use to, it's just such a breath of fresh air to hear. The lighter side of genocide, as you call it. And I wrote a few comments underneath Vin for the win under a few of the videos. And the interviewer, the guests you have on right now, the guests you've had on, they're all top-notch. The style, I love it. I don't get depressed afterwards from listening. I always walk away a little bit more knowledgeable afterwards. And I just had to get a hold of this Vinnie Eastwood and, let you know that I really, really enjoyed the show. And I had a comment, actually, for both you guys. Can you guys still hear me?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay. You guys were talking about, it was kind of all over the place, kind of. I came in a little bit late. But
yeah, it is. I know you.
But good stuff though, and more people. I'm gonna post put more of your stuff on Facebook so that more people can hear the show, because they really need to. And a lot of people that will be turned off by maybe the style of somebody like an Alex Jones or more of the scaremongering stuff would definitely, I think, be able to get into your show by virtue of the fact, you know, that, you know, the way that you present. And once again, you know, kudos to that. But my comment was, you know, when the Japanese had the whole Fukushima incident, what I noticed that was different from here in the States was in New Orleans, and I'm not criticizing the people at all. I mean, it was terrible what happened. But, you know, there was rioting and, you know, looting, and it was just a mess. And I had read somewhere that the way that the Japanese conducted themselves during their meltdown and, you know, all hell breaking loose there, there were no murders of when at the time of the article that I read. There was no, you know, mass looting. You know, there was no rioting. And I think it spoke a lot to, you know, the culture and, you know, just the differences in, you know, like here, you know, if there's a power outage, you know, people are ready, because we've had some hurricanes here in South Florida. I mean, we got hit by Katrina, too. And it was crazy. I mean, at the gas pumps, and the ATMs run out of money. And, you know, people freak out, and I'm a normally laid-back person, and I was getting, like, super-duper anxious. And I was like, wow, I'm really, like, nervous. It was kind of like, you know, super high-tension sort of a event. And I could see how people would act out in a situation like that. But I just wanted to say...
Chris.
Yeah.
In that situation... Had you had the Katrina built up in your head through the media over a number of days previously so that the fear was all there, or did Katrina just suddenly show up like the tsunami and everybody was just shocked and reeling with it and then just start to deal with it as it came in?
You know what? That's a good point, Vinny. As a matter of fact, I'm sure that, you know, I try not to watch as much news, and... I think you're onto something when you say that I think they definitely do build up, you know, they do pump up, whether it's weather or, you know, without getting into HARP and all that, whether it's a weather event or whatever event, you know, whenever it's always, you know, super negative and they scare people. And if it bleeds, it leads, you know, that old cliche on the news, they definitely employ that tactic. But what happened with Katrina that was a little bit different was, a lot of people, because we get lucky on our side of Florida, where we normally get hit, people were actually rollerblading, and they were out, and nobody really was preparing too much, because they thought it was just going to, you know, be a Category 2 or whatever the number was, and it wasn't going to be a big deal, and we actually kind of got blindsided. But that being said, I do think that the media did play into the aftermath when, you know, people were all without power for just a few days, and there was, like, mass runs to the gas stations, and the streetlights were out, and people were grabbing everything off the shelves. I mean, the Walmarts and the big mega stores, they were just cleared out, and the power was only out for, like, 3 days. And, you know, like, tops for the worst-case people, 3 weeks. But that was very, you know, few. And that was here in South Florida. But, I mean, people just went into full-on, you know, they were buying batteries that they, you know, the batteries you don't even use. They were buying flashlights. They were buying stuff that, you know what I mean? People were freaking out. And I definitely think that the media probably had a huge role in that. But I just wanted to contrast, you know, the ways that the two cultures I noticed from that report. And I just wanted to throw that out to you guys and you know, get your insight into that.
Eric, you want to take that?
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I wonder what does that say about the cultures, or is it a cultural thing, or is it just the media manipulation? What does it say that the Japanese would have reacted that way, say, and then Americans might have reacted a different way to a natural or unnatural, as it may be, disaster? What do you think, Vinny? What are the cultural reasons, or is it the media, or is it a mix of both?
In Japan, they came from a empirical culture and that ended as little as World War II. with extremely high rent and ownership prices. What it's produced essentially as a direct result is a very calm, a very head down, don't make a fuss, don't go out of control society that is very easy to control, but also very disciplined of the self and very, very private. So that culture has a very different reaction to, say, the American culture, where it's be out in front of the movie cameras and stuff like that, where they deify celebrity and everybody wants to be one. Whereas in Japan, it's the direct opposite. People don't want to be noticed, and they don't want to cause problems or disturbances in other people's lives. There's a video of Tom Green goes to Japan, where he goes on a train in Japan, and it's deathly quiet.
I remember that.
Nobody's saying a word. So he starts being the typical troublemaker that he is. He goes, I want you to yell out if you like potatoes. it's just totally off. And we don't fit into that culture, because that culture is designed for people to fit within it, not above it, not to be noticed or appear out of place. So when a disaster happens, the person who appears out of place is the person making a fuss. And in America, the people who appear out of the place are the people who are sitting there relaxed and ain't got no problems, because they've already sussed it beforehand and they're completely calm. And it's incidentally, we were talking about synchronicity before. I heard the song yesterday and it reminded me, and I was just like, man, whoa, why is that song playing? And this means something to me. It was, I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so. And I think that the American culture could actually benefit from turning Japanese in that respect, so that when disasters do happen, people aren't going out panicking, getting all the gas. I mean, it's 3 days. You're in the most developed country in the world, arguably, and you're panicking because the power's gone out for a little bit? What?
And the safest.
I mean, am I wrong, or is paranoia and overreaction the modus operandi of the USA now? Certainly seems to be the modus operandi of the government, and as a direct result, the people begin to behave in a similar fashion, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah,
contrast that with the culture that gave us Zen and meditation and whatnot, right? I think there's an idiom in Japanese that says the nail that sticks up the highest is the first one to get hammered. And so it's like you're saying, nobody wants to stick out, whereas in America, it's like the opposite. Everyone's trying to show their individuality and how different and rebellious they are from everyone else. So I think there are definitely cultural reasons behind the issue we're talking about. But I think the media... forgot who mentioned it, but I think that's definitely part of it too, is that the media always hypes us up. And right back to the fear-mongering thing again, when your media is being delivered to you in that fear-mongering professional fashion, you know, you get all worked up about it. And when your media is being delivered in the fashion that Vinny's given it to you, you know, you leave feeling a lot better. So I think we're definitely onto something, and we've woven a thread between the two subjects we're talking about.
Okay. Well, Chris, thank you for your call, man. Do you have a final point there?
Sorry, Vinny, I didn't hear what you said.
I was going to thank you for your call, and if you have anything final to say, now's the time.
If you guys want to see, because you always play George Carlin on that buffer, made a George versus the TSA video. Just type in George versus the TSA if you want to have a laugh, and check out my channel. And I will definitely be promoting both of you guys, and keep up the good work, the two of you. I'm going to sit back and enjoy the rest of this, and I'm going to try to keep calling in the future and spreading the word about your show, Vinny.
That's ridiculously awesome of you, bro. Thank you. Thank you, like, a lot. That actually means quite a bit to me.
And thanks, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. All right, so we'll go to our next caller now. Tim in Wisconsin. Tim, are you there, bro, this time?
Hi. I really like this show. I just couldn't help feeling like not being able to agree more with this guest about what he said at the beginning of the show, because for such a long time, it seemed to me like getting a job working for someone else was the only thing there was for me, because I for such a long time, just could never get any business of my own off the ground, even just a little bit enough. And I kept working at trying to get a small home audio and video recording production business off the ground, and also kept trying a few network marketing businesses. Then after the last regular part-time job at a privately owned Rock and Roll Coco that ended up later going out of business, just because of how long every place after that I tried to apply at a job kept saying, or for a job kept saying, year after year, sorry, no openings. Then I couldn't get a job anywhere anymore. The thing that kept me working at getting the recording business thing going is that I kept having at least little successes once in even quite enough of a while. It was finally toward the end of August of 2010 that the recording work started becoming steady enough, and even though it has still been only bringing in just only a good enough extra money here and there, I still found myself working harder for myself and being my own best employee, because with it being my own thing, I found it meaning more.
Yeah, it is true. That's something I tried to do as well earlier on, Tim, is you try to work real hard, sort of thing, and you realize that hard work ain't actually working to a degree, and you got to think about, you know, how to work smarter, how to change up what you're doing, and how to receive benefits, and it's kind of like I was watching this movie called Love and Other Drugs, and he's also like peddling pills to people and things like that. And his salesman trainee says to him, you know, just give him a pen, okay? Give him something, okay? Because if you give a gift to somebody, it obligates a response from them. And that's exactly what I started doing out there, man. I just started, you know, bringing on people to the radio show and just giving them some platform, or going out to the protests and filming those people with the microphones and the megaphones and actually putting them up on there and just gifting all day long. And eventually, those things start to come full circle and come back to you, and it turns out to be exactly how much you need. Tim, thanks for your call. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and we'll respect our right to live here on the land. It's Dino Ranga, Tita Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up
and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that attempts to keep it bangster. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the E. Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Or better yet, I found the best way to use. And let me make people understand something. I love to be used for a useful purpose. You give me a job, you give me parameters, and I will go in there and I will exceed expectations and I will make something real awesome. And I do that because I like other people having things that are cool because of me, or useful because of me. There's been occasions where I've gone to parties and stuff like that and have a few drinks, and I notice my mate's sink is just absolutely filthy. People have been ashing cigarettes into it. There's like empty bottles in there, boxes of crap, and all the dirty dishes and everything. And I'll just spend 20 minutes while everybody's partying behind me just cleaning up my bro's sink and stuff like that and stacking everything up. And they just go to him and it's like, bro, have a look at that now, and I can guarantee you not a single other person tossed a bottle or a cigarette butt in that sink the whole rest of the night. And I did that specifically so that he wouldn't have quite so much of a massive cleanup job to do the morning after when he was feeling like crap, okay? And that's not a terribly isolated incident. That's what I'm doing when I'm partying sometimes, okay? So you can imagine what I'm doing when I'm working. So let me explain something. You want to hear any guest that you want to see on the show or something like that, before you send me their name and a suggestion, you go to the an NSA affiliated search engine like Google, and you put in that name of that guest and my name next to them. I can guarantee you, man, we've had hundreds of different guests on the show from all over the world across many, many different fields of eclectic study. I've done this to create an online audio and video library so that people can listen to all of their heroes and all of these people that have great information without the extra added benefits of being cut off by the radio show host, or being challenged by the radio show host. Simply allow that person to tell their story and have a good time with them and get to be knowing the real them. That's actually the purpose of this show, because I want to know who my guests are by having a real conversation with them. I have very little structure in my life for this very reason, because if you've got the plan, man... It, like I said before, it cuts you off from the possible synchronistic things that can happen. So, yeah, there's lots up there, ladies and gentlemen, all free. There's video versions at Mr. News Guerrilla Media, the YouTube channel, New Zealand's number one subscribed YouTube news channel. I'm actually beating the mainstream media here on YouTube. They all have a presence on YouTube, and I eclipse them all by far because of the fact that I've got so many people all around the world listening to me, guesting with me, and helping me in many, many ways. This is a group effort. I'm simply the little Shiva in the center of the earth, pressing all the buttons and stuff.
There's a great statue at Angkor Wat that has Shiva dancing. He's on one leg, and then there's all these angels on the other side tugging on a rope, a tug-of-war battle, and then there's all these demons on the other side tugging the other tug-of-war battle. I love that image. How appropriate it is for this world of good and evil, male and female, day and night, sun and moon, you know, inhale, exhale, this world of duality. But dancing on the middle of that dualistic dance of good and evil is Shiva, the god. Just, he's here for experience. He's here to play. You know, he doesn't get involved in the good and evil, doesn't get wrapped up in it. And that's kind of how... You got to be, you got to take that perspective, because if you're pulling too hard on that tug of war rope all day, even if you're on the good side trying to do good for humanity, sometimes you got to take a break and just dance in the middle, man. You know?
Well, I've said for a long time that the key to balance is being able to swing to either extreme and still be able to come back to the center.
Yeah. Don't swing too far over to those demons, though. They're pulling really hard. You can see in their faces they're scrunching. You know, I don't think they take much time to dance. They're pretty adamant about their pulling.
Hey, in fact, this was something that occurred to me. I've got a couple of dance videos that I've done on YouTube, and we have had a suggestion on here that I haven't had Michael Tesarian on, and that's true. I've tried many, 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 many times. No response. So that's why. But what were we talking about here? Dancing. Yes. A couple of mates are dance party festival kind of puttings on, and they're starting to go non-profit and that kind of thing. And they've been running it all on volunteers people who bust their ass on their Saturday, working real, real, real hard to set up these massive gigs for free, and then spend all night with all these people who are getting so massively smashed off their face on their behalf. And they spend all night taking care of everyone in a really nice and lovely environment that they've created. And it is a different experience. And now every time they throw a party, it matters not what my plans are. They get put on hold to go to these particular parties. There's been this atmosphere in Western culture that going out to the same bar every weekend, getting wasted off your nut with the same people, listening to the same music, is somehow a fulfilling and regenerative state of being that gives you the capacity somehow of getting through the next week's work with exactly. all the it excess does, money. That,
if you're working for somebody else, right? If you're working for somebody else, their passion, selling your time wholesale, and they're selling at retail. You gotta have a drink on Friday night just to forget the fact that you're selling your life away, you know. But when you actually follow your passion, this is what I tell people: like, everybody's got something that they love to do and they're really good at it. And if money wasn't an issue, that's what they'd spend most of their time doing anyway. So it's really important that everybody realize what that is about you, because everybody's got that thing, whatever that is. Figure out what that is and do it anyway, and do it passionately in your free time when you're not working. No matter how hard a job you've got, how hard you've got it now, there's some time, even on the job, sometimes on the job you can pursue your passion, you know, during free time on the job, but if not off the job, and just try to mold that into something that you can do for money, you know, or not even money, for trade, but for, you need an energy exchange.
For survival.
Key, right? For survival, right? You just, and over time, it takes a while, but if it really is your passion and it's the thing you love to do and you do it anyway, for sure, it's gonna happen over time. It might take you a few years, but eventually, you're going to be doing that thing. You know, I watch a lot of people watch the Shea Carl videos on YouTube, you know. He's just this family man. He was a countertop marble salesman, you know. He hated his job, and he just started vlogging his family life every day and putting it on YouTube. And now he's been doing it for almost 4 years now, and he's got his own, you know, production, vlogging production company and stuff. And it's, you know, he's living his passion. He's just his passion is his family. He's a really loving father and husband, and that comes through in his videos, so people love to watch him. And there he is. Now he's been living his passion every day for years, and you can see it in his face. You can feel it in his energy. Compare that with the people that are drinking in the same bar with the same friends, listening to the same music every weekend, like you're talking about. That's just a therapy for those people, right? Because they're not pursuing their passion. They're not going with the flow of the universe. They're not going with the path that is actually meant for them. So that's just a way to forget that fact for one more week and another week and another week, you know. But once you get on the track, you know, I don't know the last time I had alcohol, but back in the days of my wage slavery, I was doing the same thing. So there may be a link there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've also become cognizant that our lives, if they're miserable, we have to escape them somehow. Okay, even somebody who is physically a slave in manacles, or somebody who is physically in prison, attempts some form of escape, whether that be literally trying to escape that prison or trying to escape it in his mind, kind of thing, pretending he's not there by burying himself in a book or smuggling some weed in or something to help passing that annoying, painful, restrictive experience through, like a kidney stone, you know? It's like soap operas, how people try to escape from their crappy life as a dissatisfied housewife with an unappreciative husband by living through the dramas of the made up characters on television. And what people do is they come from that understanding and then they switch off the soap operas and they start watching this kind of stuff, but they still just keep watching. They don't make the connection between you. Life is not a spectator sport. You should spend more time doing things rather than watching other people doing things. If you've already seen somebody do one thing, go out and try that one thing and see how it works, because it may not work for you. Gathering information is very, very important. However, you can gather information forever because there is too much information for you to know it all. So you will never stop studying if you choose to try and study at all. So we restrict ourselves in a lot of ways from doing something that's reasonable instead of doing what's reasonable. Okay, here's a problem: is a water main burst. Let's plug up that pipe there and let's get the water flow in the right direction again. Instead of doing that, we call somebody else and have them take care of it. Abdicate our personal responsibility and in fear of our abilities. You know, like, what if I can't accomplish that? What if I wouldn't be able to fix that water pipe? What do you got to lose by giving it a go? If you screw up, there's plenty of other professional people out there who'll tell you you're a screw up and you'll learn a valuable lesson, and then you probably won't screw it up quite so bad next time. You know, what are people afraid of? Why aren't they getting out there? Their energy levels are so low. They have chronic illnesses. They have chronic debilitating conversations and relationships with toxic people. They don't choose to detox their bodies. They don't choose to detox their lives. They don't choose to detox their minds. And as a result, society has become uncivilized. And as a result of that, some people wonder, if we don't have a civilized society, then what's the point putting out the pretense of being civilized anymore? And they lose their manners. They get real angry with everybody for no reason because they think nothing matters. This happens to a lot of truthers, man. They get ticked off about everything and everybody, because they're filling their heads full of all this real nasty, scary information on a very, very consistent basis. And it messes with your head. That is not freedom. That is not constructive. You are meant for more than attacking other people. You're supposed to build other people, help to pull them up and pull yourself up with them. I've noticed this. I can't get anywhere without other people's help. But I don't go anywhere if I choose to do nothing as well. There is a symbiotic relationship going on here with every single organism that you interact with. You need to recognize its importance.
Yeah, well, yeah, and some relationships aren't symbiotic, like you were saying. Some relationships are parasitic and toxic. And that's another problem, is there's a lot of psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissists, and just generally negative and toxic people, and it's not your responsibility to allow them to do what I call a toxic mind dump on you whenever they want to. Michael Tessarian calls them psychic vampires. It's a lot of words for them, but the idea is people who are so bad at dealing with their own stuff, their own emotions and everything, that they have to dump this toxic mind load onto somebody else by blabbing on about their how they were wronged, or, you know, this or that that happened to them. And you'll know who these people are because they do it chronically, and afterwards you'll feel drained of energy and they'll seem like they're better off. You know, they at first they might have been angry or sad or something, and at the end they're all smiley and happy, and you're like, ugh, once again I had to deal with this person. And it's not your responsibility to deal with those kind of people. If you've got those people in your life, get them out. They're on the wrong vibration. Listen to Vinnie Eastwood. He's on the right vibration.
That's right. They're energy vampires, ladies and gentlemen, and you have to invite them in so they can suck you dry. Don't invite them in! It's
Am I wrong?
Come on. Let's get real, people. We'll see you right after the break at thevinnyasonshow.com.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide conspiratorial gangster computer god communism with wall-to-wall deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people to keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist parroting puppet gangster playboy scum on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the
There
Very
is no
show.
Escape from this we are the gangster police.
I was just thinking about
the deadly
American Freedom
that
Radio. It's kind of like the cigarettes of the truth movement. It's habit forming. Speaking of habit forming, and the capitulating habit of taking callers on this show, we have Chris from Louisiana calling. And Chris, welcome.
Hey, can you hear me?
Chris,
okay,
you're on the air. Yeah, man.
Okay, great. Because I'm at the park with my little beautiful little girl, and love listening to you. My iPhone app went down, but I found a way through the internet. But that aside, I just love calling in, because I'm looking for like-minded people to discuss everything that you guys discuss, and those of us that are paying attention want to discuss and pay attention to. So here I am.
Okay. Well, what's on your mind today, bro?
Well, are you guys familiar with the Antarctic? I'm sorry?
What was that?
No, I was just, I won't take too much time, but are you familiar with... with Ben Gardner?
No, I'm not familiar with...
He's a blogger that David Icke likes to put a link on his site almost daily. Not that that's the main reason I'm calling, but he does talk about... His recent blog was about how our society is built on fear. You know, everything from the news to you need insurance, you need to stick with your jobs. Everything you guys started talking off about, you know, being slaves to the system, working for other people and whatnot. I just wanted to interject that, and I just wanted to say that I have done exactly the same thing you guys have done, following my passion, which is music, and I'm not going to get rich, and I don't want to. I don't need that much money, but I'm teaching, playing, and then I've taken steps. I work for a high school, and they've given me more duties, and some of those are actually just sitting in front of a computer while kids take a test, and I get to do my other passion, my main passion, which is truth speaking. So you guys are dead on.
Yeah, man.
Well, how ironic. I was just going to say, how ironic that you're using a learning institution's time to actually learn something.
Hey, and let me tell you guys, it's a Catholic institution at that.
Get one back on the Vatican, bro.
Oh. Man, I can't keep my mouth shut. I don't have a radio show like you, but my bandmates, just people in my life, I can't help but, because everything that comes up in our lives, there's a truth side and there's a propaganda side, and I just can't shut myself up. So I think I'm actually starting to enlighten a few teachers and a few people here and there. I'm just going to keep doing what I do, which is what you do, and talk.
Well, I talk mostly to the converted bro for the exact reason. I know that they'll listen. When you're talking with people who won't listen, on the other hand, I prefer to dispatch the information grenade technique. You throw a bit of information at them about one random thing, and then you walk away and you let it explode on its own. Because otherwise, if it explodes and you're in the room and they start an argument with you or something like that, it'll start to become a little bit worse off for you. Rather, you let them come to you. And it takes a number of years sometimes, because you've got to hear the same concepts coming out of different mouths. You won't be the one to wake a person up. And in fact, I'm of the belief that you can't wake people up. You simply cannot. Did anybody wake you up?
or did you take the initiative to go and have a look at all these different radio shows and watch all these different YouTube videos and read all these books and listen to all these people and start talking with people about all these things that really matter? Did you start analyzing the news, or did somebody do that all for you? Nobody woke you up. You woke yourself up. And so what truthers have forgotten is that very important fact. And so they ignore it and they go out trying to wake people up.
Yeah, the most you can do is throw seeds, right? Like I said, throw a grenade or throw some seeds and hope they grow. And it's interesting, when you water the seeds with fear-based information, the trees don't want to grow. So when you you come at people with a certain kind of attitude, they're just going to say, oh, I don't even want to know about this stuff, this conspiracy stuff or whatever it is, your political stuff, because they feel your negative vibe. And, you know, rightly so, you've got a negative vibe because the stuff that's going on in the world is pretty negative. But it's really important to flip the script on that and just try and keep it positive and show people that I know this stuff and it enriches my life. And I'm still able to be maybe even more positive than you, because of that knowledge, you know, because of the enlightenment that you get from just opening up and not closing down to the way the fear-based mainstream media does to you. Just open up to everything and listen to everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's fear is meant to protect you by making you act instead of think. Okay, so if you've got fear in your everyday life, you don't have any time to think, and I think that's probably the most dangerous thing for people, is that they don't know how to think their way into or out of situations that they may or may not want to be in. But anyway, Chris, thanks very much for your call, bro. Have you got any final comments?
Just exactly what he said. I have, through this knowledge seeking that I've been doing for the last 5 years, I have changed my life spiritually, mentally, just the three big ones, spiritually, mentally, bodily, because I'm discovering things that you should do to improve yourself. And I just try to get people, just open your eyes, read, turn off the TV. There's so much out there in the universe that is truly stranger than fiction. It's amazing. I have huge young child eyes of the world, and I'm just going to keep doing what I do, just like you guys do. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having your daughter. Oh, wait, I think somebody else had her for you.
All right, y'all take care.
All right, thanks, man. Hey, and that was another point I wanted to raise with people as well. You ever seen the movie Idiocracy? And it's basically the concept of idiocracy is that stupid people just keep breeding and breeding and breeding and breeding, and smart people just keep putting it off and putting it off until eventually smart people become extinct and morons rule the world by and large by a mob moron rule. and I was just thinking, mate, here's a concept for you. Firstly, truth of dating, you know. Get a missus who's kind of like into this stuff. And secondly, truth of babies. Oh, yeah. It seems like a very good idea to me, man. I don't know. Balance the equation, at least. And I've found a lot of truthers who have kids. They tend to work harder, ironically. They've got more to do. And they actually start producing more work because they're suddenly fighting for something, an organism that they're responsible for. I thought that was quite interesting. We've got our next caller now, Ryan in Ontario, I think. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny. Can you hear me?
Yep.
So I called in about half a year ago. But I was just listening to you guys, and today someone made my day as far as informing people. I informed one guy about Heart and Body Extract. He got it for his dad, and his dad loves it, and his brother loves it now. And it just made my day that it just changed their lives, and I could inform them a little bit. You know, like just these little things that some people won't listen. Don't ever push someone that doesn't want to listen, because you can't do it. But informing people and warning people. Some people grasp it, and it's a good feeling that when certain people learn certain things, and you can actually help them.
Yeah, so that's a good point, Ryan. Thank you for your call, man. And now we're going to go to CB in Massachusetts. CB, welcome to the program.
Vinny, how you doing?
Good to talk to you, sir. Good, man, now that you're here.
Hey, great topics tonight. Yeah, I just popped in to say hello, and I don't remember the previous caller's name. I guess two back, but talking about fear mongering and social engineering and the police state and whatnot. And yeah, it's very disturbing. I think it was last night you had a show on with this woman whose house was literally broken into and down by federal officers and terrorized her. That was a very a deep interview you had with that woman, and it just goes to show that, I mean, we can't be complacent as individuals. We have to keep our personal mandates together and band together and overturn this police state that's being developed throughout the world.
I think that's absolutely correct. And the way that you beat the police state, or rather, there's an old saying, how do you expose a fascist? You make them act like it. Then everybody sees them for exactly what they are.
That's correct, man. Expose the truth.
Yeah. CB, thanks for your call, bro. And Eric, thank you very much for joining me. Man, this has been like a real great 2 hours, man. It's been choice, bro.
Yeah, and you enjoyed it. Thanks, man.
All right. Check out his website, ladies and gentlemen, AtlanteanConspiracy.com. Eric Dubay, like Dubay, and apparently he's got a band with his brother. They call themselves the Dubay Brothers. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.